It's important to note the limitations of technology.
It's being recycled as we speak.
That's exactly correct. And so is our local area as, smoke and the fires affect our towers. So apologies for the break off. Does anyone recall what the last thing you might have heard was?
I was taking notes and you were starting to acknowledge that Angela's emotions.
Yes.
You had wrapped up, and so that's where you last were.
Thank you very much for that, Janaya. So what we were saying is, everyone, and hopefully that recording is going to stay in the cloud and be there when I get back, because it just, okay, there it is. It's showing that it's converting. So coming back to the moment and to the question, it's just to say, you know, we talked about the quantum entanglement of emotion. And that is to say, whenever one human being honestly deals with an emotion, notice when somebody feels sadness in a group, when, you know, everyone else is trying to stuff it, how quickly tears can spread. Or when somebody is trying to suppress a laugh and finally lets go a laugh, how everyone can break up laughing. Just like, too, the contagion of anger and hate can happen if it is allowed to take hold in you. Well, the opposite is true, that if you allow those emotions to come up, to witness them, to be with them, to not try and suppress them to yourself or in front of others, but to acknowledge their presence and to be in presence with them, then that experience is like a safety valve, releasing some of the pressure and acknowledging the truth of the moment of who you authentically are. And every time you do that for yourself, you not only set an example for others of how to do that, and by creating a safety of showing it, but what you also do is you actually vent a little of that emotion for the entire world. It may be a droplet of an ocean, but think about if everyone allowed those droplets to become waves, and then those waves to become tidal waves, and then in fact full seas, where the tides, if you will, and the currents in them become more genuinely expressed. And that is the quantum entanglement of emotion, but that's also the honest, authentic, personal starting place of you, Angela, acknowledging that place in yourself. And once you do, as we said, emotion is energy in motion. It does not stay fixed. It will move. Notice after you've had a good cry, ladies and gentlemen, that after a while, it just dissipates and it moves on to something else. And often what's left is even a state of peace. It's only the allowance of it and the movement of it that does so. Excuse me. And thank you. So thank you for that, Angela. Mm-hmm. David, you had you were next in the line of questions. David Wilkins, are you there? Where are you? Oh, there you are. Okay. Are you still have a question, David?
Can you hear me?
Now we can, yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can, yeah, David.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Michaels and Steve thanks to you all for being here. It's wonderful to be here, coming in from the southern hemisphere, and sort of feeling that both the separation and the connection also is very much the sense here, just the togetherness that we have, which is wonderful. I appreciated what came through about the infinite souls And the number and expression of the infinite souls, that was tremendous, and also reminded me of our infinite essences and how ongoing that is, how they are. I just wanted to ask about the state of play around the rest of the world, sort of coming, being outside of the States. You know, I'm constantly aware of that that state, and I wonder whether DMs might have some comments on the state of play, how the expression of things there in the US is being expressed particularly.
I'm sorry, Gabe, you broke up several words.
Not heard. Sorry.
I'm sorry, you broke up several words in your statement.
Sorry. My connection can the Michaels speak to what's happening in the rest of the world?
Sure.
Can people not hear me? Can you not hear me? And if not, go on.
You've broken up several times, but we did hear the question. Could we say some things about the state of the world? I mean, that's a pretty broad based order, but there are a few things.
I mean, you spoke to sort of politics frustrations and confrontation, that sort of thing. Can you speak to how that is expressing in the rest of the world? I know that's broad, but
all right. Well, we'll take a few examples.
Answer as you will.
Okay, we'll take a few examples that are relevant and significant. All right, let's take the fact that for the last 10 years, you've seen it out of the Middle East, but it's going to increase, and that is climate refugees. People fleeing places where water sources are drying up, and or in combination, that warring parties like warring states in the Middle East who are trying to gain power over water, even though it's often made up to be a Sunni versus Muslim problem, a Sunni Muslim versus Shia Muslim kind of a problem. In fact, many places in Syria right now, as well as places in eastern Iran and in northern Iraq are virtually out of water. And so many of the reasons that people are fleeing those countries and going into Europe is because they're trying to get to places that have more, obviously less war, but also offer where they can get a fresh drink. Now, that kind of problem with water is one that's going to be a real concern for the entire planet. And some of you who are in the Midwest already know it is in the Midwest. Especially, you know, in the upper, you know, the what I think they used to call it, the old Iron Belt, particularly where there was a tremendous amount of old industrial pollution in there. And what happened in Michigan and has happened in West Virginia and so forth is also happening in parts of Australia, many parts of Africa. and also is also happening in parts of China, where they have had a tremendous amount of industrial pollution of their own waterways. And of course, we needn't mention about how the how it's been amazing that most of the world's ecologically oriented groups have been talking about the pollution of the Ganges River in India for probably over, you know, a century. But it's terrible. And it is literally a function of too many human beings. Now, so we talk about climate refugees. Let's talk about the politics of China for just a moment. China's internal repressive regime has been incredibly successful in working to minimize its what it considers its foreign internal populations like the Uyghurs, but also China is a caste society, as is India, as is also the United States. And they are doing what the United States has essentially tried to do, which is, use imprisonment and or use, economic either indenturedness or enslavement to control their populations and get the most amount of productivity, but also suppress them politically. That's happening, and that's also a lot of the old energy of the old paradigm, but baby to young soul orientation, China's first level young, soon to be second level young in its country's orientation. And it is the biggest economy in the world. And it will continue to be so because it has exploitation built in, as most of you know. Most of American and even European manufacturing has either gone to China, to India, to Vietnam, to Korea, or to Brazil. And so in doing so, it has strengthened them in bringing them up into, quote, a more first world technological country, but it has also caused them to be an interesting kind of a weird chimera. They are actually the most real capitalist country in the world, China, but they have no economic freedom. Excuse me, they have no political freedoms. So as long as you go there with enough money, there's plenty of free market wheeling dealing going on. As long as you don't say anything to make angry the totalitarian regime that governs it. China is also the most ahead of the curve at a 24/7 surveillance state kind of technologies. And they have, borrowed that model really from the United States. But now they have the manufacturing base because of 40 years of importing from Apple and all the other technological companies, Motorola, and Dell, and, you name it, to create their own foundation for that. Let's talk about Russia. Russia is a country that actually will be in the business of selling water. Because they actually have a lot of it. Now, they also have a lot of polluted water, but they have a lot of huge underground aquifers. And Mr. Putin, who is literally the most powerful man in the world and literally the most richest man in the world, his power is, and his personal wealth, though secret, is still greater than anything that Mr. Bezos could aspire to. Because he has an entire country that essentially is his blank check to sign and operates like that. But he also does it with a really, really effective set of ways of both cajoling, manipulating, and suppressing his, his own populace. Many of his populace, his own population, love him because he knows how to use largesse. And he's not a Stalin. He's not as blunt or as brutal as Stalin was. Many of his forms and tactics basically go after competitors, if you will, for power that are at his level. Otherwise, he allows many of the, you know, the average folk who all you would be at, in that country to be, kind of go on their merry way and, you know, get whatever they can. And since he has managed to re-support to a degree the what's commonly called the welfare state, but you know they would have in that would have been called the you know their security apparatus, their pension state, particularly for the old. He has a lot of people because he restored it after the Communist Party, you know, folded in, you know, 92. In parts of your country, for instance, you know, we see a parallel to the kind of extreme mindsets between, quote, liberal and conservative. The only difference is many of your institutions are a lot more progressive and liberal than in the United States that have been under the control of you know, the market mania and what they what was real conservative, or more specifically oligarchy, now then called neoliberalism, which is what people mistakenly took for political liberalism, and they couldn't be further apart. Because neoliberals don't want you to have individual rights except buy their stocks. And then not have the right to pull out of them as easy unless you pay them, you know, a fee for it. In Africa, we actually see a lot of hope in Africa as it comes out of its infant soul blanketing and has many pockets of mature soul emergences. And so there are, and many of the people, many peoples in Africa are mature souls being born into there. And it, if you will, enlightened young souls, meaning they're going out of country for education and coming back to Africa to try and put in different institutions and processes and get out from the old strongman form of dictatorship. So there is, you know, hope there. However, you know, like everything, the world is literally a hotter place. And one of the things that Africa and every other place on the world is going to come at a crossroads as is that, you know, one of climate change's interesting and unfortunately terrible side effects is that the hottest places in the world are getting hotter. And there are places in, you know, the Kalahari Desert, heck, even in the United States, the Death Valley, and of course, the Great Central Desert there in Australia, that are now hitting temperatures of above 125 degrees. Most living things on planet Earth cannot live in temperatures above 130. And if those the continued desertification of these places in the world happen as the entire globe raises in temperature, it's going to increase the amount of evaporation of available water without necessarily coming down in precipitation over land. It'll come down in superstorms, sometimes over land, but a lot of times kicked up in hurricanes and typhoons. And then it'll leave lots of species dead, including encouraging the mass migration that we talked about of people trying to escape the heat. So imagine seeing large movements of peoples out of Africa to places like, and this may surprise some of you, trying to get to places like northern Canada and the Arctic Circle and even Antarctica as they begin to melt. So we hope, David, that that's covered some of the things, both, you know, environmentally and economically, as far as some of the things that are going on in the rest of the world.
Thanks so much.
Certainly. To try and give some other folks some other time here as we, Brandy, you have your hand up.
Yeah, hi. Thank you so much. I think there was someone else too before me, but my question is about right now, Canada, where I live, is looking at basic income seriously, and I'm really excited about that. But of course, it's also bringing out a lot of division, a lot of people who are of the younger idea of there's no such thing as a free lunch, and there, you know, you have to be productive and do in order to prove your worth on this planet, that kind of thinking. So I just wanted to ask Michael, how you see, I don't really know if I have a good question, but more like I'm just excited about it, and this division in how you see this division in Canada with, I know I believe it's going to happen. We have a minority government, so there's a good chance. There's going to be a lot of vitriol and a lot of fighting about it, and I just wanted to hear your comments about that.
Well, one of the underpinnings of the baby soul mentality is me and mine. And then one of the precepts that go along with that and is validated by the young soul's notion is if I possess it, it's mine and it's an extension of me. I therefore must deserve it. And if I deserve it, I have it. And if I don't have it, or you don't have it, you don't deserve it. That's the reverse kind of algebra there. And so you see one of the fundamental divisions of mindset between the baby young soul paradigm and the mature soul paradigm. And the basic contradiction that is in the baby young soul paradigm is they say breed, 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 breed. You know, babies are little angels, except when they get here and then they're children, then they're little bastards, you know, sucking off the tit of, you know, every other human being. And they're, you know, just waste products. You know, that mental division of understanding that when it's in the innocent state, it's this idealized kind of mythic figure of innocence. But when it's actually born and living and requiring resources, then it becomes a competitor and a suck and something that is somebody else's problem, right? So this mindset of, you know, what you're facing in Canada, even though Canada is basically a mature soul country, you know, a lot of the precepts are there. You have a lot of the pioneer frontier spirit there by virtue of the fact that a lot of Canada is still either rural or suburban. And a lot of Canadians make their living off of some kind of, you know, a resource extraction. You know, timber, oil, you know, name the various other kinds of mining and so forth, okay? So that, it's the hard work ethic that was programmed in by that fraud called John Calvin, who ushered in Presbyterianism and the Protestant work ethic, who turned poor Jesus on his head. You know, Jesus who said, hey, feed people, give it away, share with everybody, it's cool. You don't got to do nothing except be alive. And John Calvin said, no, the richer you are, the better you are. The more money you make, the more God blesses you. And if you're poor, you're damned. Well, that whole thinking has permeated all of Western Christianity. Why? Because Western, the Western era of things, you know, went from feudalism to mercantilism to capitalism. And all of those were based on the same precept of me first, me and mine. Now, so that's your little bit of philosophy lesson, ladies and gentlemen, from spiritual to economics. To convert it, what has to happen is there has to be a realization. If something or a human being is alive, it is everyone's responsibility.
That's so beautiful. I wrote a song called Just Because I'm Alive.
Please share it if you would with everyone.
It's free to download, actually, but it's for Basic Income Movement. I've sang it at 3 congresses, and it's basically just because I'm alive, I deserve enough to eat and a safe place to sleep.
That's exactly, exactly. And that is a mature and old soul realization.
I'm 6 level mature.
So. And we would tell everyone, Brandy, that sentiment is beautiful and brilliant and closer to holding to the truth, love, and energy core that we, you know, promote or prognosticate, that is, you know, at the center of the Tao itself. Because it is impossible to have exclusion like that under the name of deservedness, and then claim that a God of mercy or a God of justice doesn't want people to eat.
Yes. And I think if we're born here, well, I know if we're born here, we belong here. This is our home. We deserve the piece of the pie to eat and be sheltered. We deserve innately to yes. be sheltered and fed just because we live here.
And no what's other. Interesting, yes, we agree. And we want to flip the coin and we want to offer to you that almost all of you, every human being innately, even those in the goal of flow, as Joe can attest, because he's in flow and he's worked his butt off most of his life. Even if it has, even if he says it was fun, he still was engaged in meaningful activity that gave him a sense of being not only self-sustaining, but also contributing. Almost every human being alive wants to contribute, except the vampire class.
Yes.
And the vampire class aren't all wealthy, by the way. They're the persons who are usually stuck with a severe case of the chief feature of greed, and it's irreparable for them. Now, what you're talking about then, and to get to further this, is the reason that the basic income movement has come out of pragmatists and scholars is they finally said, look, the reality of modern economics is it is now consumption-based, not production-based. Because you've basically, across the world, machines have taken over production from human beings. So even the ability to have that kind of a job anymore is disappearing. And therefore, what keeps companies going and what keeps transactions happening is consumption. Well, if people don't have jobs that they can then earn money to then spend and create consumption, what do you have? You either have a massive displaced class who eventually, after they stop starving to death and get really pissed off, then they just have mob violence, you know, in the size of millions of people at a time. And the wealthy are kind of figuring out, you know, you really can't have that. And even if you have your own little fiefdom, you can't hire enough security guards. And a lot of the soldiers in national militaries come from those families. There's an expression that some of the soldiers in this that are here tonight, and we know several of you are ex-military, called fragging, which is when a soldier shoots their officers and says essentially, fuck you for giving me such a terrible order. And that's what many a wealthy person is realizing, that you can't have this kind of wealth inequality in the world, still maintain a consumption-based society, let alone maintain a relatively ordered society. It is impossible to suppress forever or oppress forever. So mature soul countries, like most of the Scandinavian countries, many of the European Union, have some form of socialism, and whether it's universal healthcare or ushering in forms of welfare payments or what will become eventually universal basic income. Why? And what the wealthy will begin to realize, as long as you have your holdings, you're still going to be making profits. They might become, you know, a flat line of profits because they're predictable, but they'll still happen. And we see that it is liable to pass there. There is liable to be a lot of screaming and kicking until the elderly in Canada start having a little bit more base, you know, than their pensions and so forth. And then when that happens by the end of the 2020s, you're going to find that just as many elderly in the United States have found that, gee, that communist Obamacare isn't so bad after all, because they can at least see a doctor, et cetera, et cetera.
So. Our health card was probably just as contentious when it first came about. I know it was. And now you wouldn't see anyone giving it up, no matter who they vote for, right? It's just a right we have.
Well, it's interesting. 25 years ago, Donald Trump, who was then a Democrat, actually came out, and he actually said, healthcare ought to be a government funded thing. But you know why he said it? So that companies didn't have to pay for it. Because he wanted his profitability to be higher.
Yeah.
Now, the good news for him is, over 30 years of Republican administrations and a couple of questionable Democratic ones, in other words, who were squeezed by the Republicans, helped to dismantle a lot of the protections that were in place in the, from the Great Depression through the 60s and then expanded in the 70s and then began contracting under Ronald Reagan. But nonetheless, all of that having been said, the movement in the world is bringing it in that direction.
Yay.
And that's all part of, if you will, a real manifestation or an economic manifestation of mature soul principles in action.
Right.
You cannot have rampant inequality in a mature soul environment, because mature souls depend on more equality to have connection. Otherwise, it's disconnection.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, and it ties with the environment too, because we can't keep producing and sustain.
It's impossible. It's impossible. And yeah. Not only that, we will tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that you will not be getting to Mars before 2050.
I don't want to go, thank you.
No, but I mean, that's the big holdout that someone like Elon Musk, who's a mature soul, is saying, that, and we got to privatize it. He and another mature soul, what's his name? Atlantic Virgin Air, or Richard, whatever his name is,
Richard Branson.
Thank you, Richard Branson. They are in some ways, have some mentality about wanting to do things for the betterment of humanity, but it's still tied into the economics of capitalism and me first. See, so it's hedging their bets against it. Bill Gates has done that. The Gates Foundation, he does spend a lot of money on humanitarian causes, but he does it through a foundation that basically keeps his hold and his wealth intact while he's doing it. So we hope you're done. Phil had a question, May, and then we'll take yours, okay? All right, Phil.
I just wanted to mention that Troy Tolley channeled that a resource-based economy is a 100% certainty, but I didn't exactly say when.
And we'll call it something else, resource-based, and it has other terms for it, including a gifting economy. And a gifting economy, ladies and gentlemen, means it is what all the American Indians used to do for eons. They would bring gifts to their neighbors and initiate trades. The whole American mythos of Thanksgiving and how the Indians rescued the pilgrims, and they're still regretting it to this day, we might add, by literally bringing to them foodstuffs when the pilgrims didn't have a hoot and clue of how to deal with. They knew about snow, but they didn't know the American continent and the American food groups and American soils and how crops brought over from England would do here. And they were facing famine, and the Native Americans did bail them out, but not quite with let's sit down and, young Goodman Brown over here and Hiawatha over here, a breaking bread and a turkey leg. No, that's a little exaggeration. It was a much longer period. The Native Americans figure, hey, maybe we can civilize these people by showing them some kindness. Because it was more or less, even with all the inner squabbling of Native American tribal energies, Native Americans basically had a live and let live, give as good as you got kind of an economic system where they'd raid each other every once in a while, but then they'd intermarry. But they never carried out full-scale slaughters. They never carried out full-scale, just decimations of each other, nothing like that. They basically got along, and they had a lot of geography to do that. But there was a lot of Native Americans here when the pilgrims arrived, And to this day, many historians don't really want to acknowledge that the fact on the North American continent, there were probably, and we're talking about from the tip of the Arctic all the way down to the Isthmus of Panama, which is all the North American continent, there was almost 100 million Indians here. And that, and what has been happened, of course, is the biggest genocide in the history of humanity happened in the 400 years since. And yet it never gets talked about. Because it's easy when you have a Eurocentric, you know, white-oriented, Christian-based culture that says, well, we don't like to talk about that. Anyway, so when this resource economy does come around, and it will, it'll also take time to work out. But a gift-based economy, starting off, will be where you actually contribute what you have to the greater good. Now, of course, they call, you know, the young soul calls that communistic, and what we call that is communitarianism. And that's how small towns across the world have always worked. But they just haven't figured out how to trade commodities that way on a large scale. So that's the invention. That's the kind of thing that will happen. Now, interestingly enough, if you know the invention of the computer and using some kind of a computer-based credit system and more of an equalization of the value and worth of all commodities will help bring that about. And then it can be monitored. The accounting of that can be monitored in a much more large-scale way. So, bye, Tony. Thank you for coming. And so, yes, that's correct. It will. But the how-tos are still going to be in contention for a long time, because there's many a young soul out there who doesn't want to give up their power, their status, their control over resources, and their little bit of ego-based, you know, I am God because I am wealthy, you know, spiritual lessons yet. So May, and then Russ, and then Jillian.
Steve and Michaels. Firstly, thank you for your channeling, by the way.
Yes, you're welcome.
Thank you for making it, you know, here this evening, despite the challenges.
Thank you for the acknowledgement. Car got towed. Ha 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 ha.
Steve and Michaels, the point I wanted to touch upon was what you said about one-on-one and the difficulty with that. Now I'm bringing it down from the very broad scale back down to the
sort from of the exalted to the ordinal.
The small, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just, you know, the day-to-day level of interaction and happenings. And and you were talking about aggression and the negative pole of aggression being belligerence. And I've had a little bit of sort of meeting with the encountering with the aggressive energy, and I'm not very good at producing behavior aside from flight or fight, and I also you were talking about overleaves as well, and I recognize that according to my overleaf combinations, I find myself really recoiling in the face of aggression, and my overleaf being emotional centering, which I've really tried to sort of maneuver into a more sort of sensible place rather than being, you know, excessively anything in particular, but I'm recoiling and I'm finding aggression to be really kind of scary. It alarms me. It really terrifies me. So I don't know whether that's just because I'm sort of interpreting it as something that's going to sort of wipe me out or take me down or something like that. But I wanted to just get your feedback on, you know, when you're on a one-to-one basis with, if you were talking about the overleaves for the quality of the year, but when you're faced with all of these characteristics, these overleaves of the year of 2020, represented in a person who's standing in front of you, you know, just a single person, you know, what would you suggest, you know, to, I mean, I suppose objectivity helps in being being able to step back is helpful in being trying to be coming from a more loving place. But I've certainly really struggled with that.
Well, first of all, let's talk about the bookends that make up a human, the human being. The Homo sapien animal that has an amygdala and a lower brainstem that is triggered in the reticular activating system and goes into fight flight. But there's also another one there, May, called freeze kind of responses. And those are the reactive centers that the Buddha, for instance, and deep meditators really work at trying to enter into that part of the autonomic or reactive nervous system and enter into learning to calm it with deliberate, conscious meditation and breath. It is not, they will all tell you, it is not about pretending it away or toughening up like the Macho Man does. In fact, the Macho Man is the epitome of the person who's overriding his terror and channeling it into aggression, even though his amygdala is causing his brain to go crazy. He's essentially acting like a monitor lizard, you know, thrashing about. You know, in a lot of ways, the flight response is a much more healthy response than fight, because as the old adage goes, you never know, you know, who's in the fight with you and where they're at. I think it was Mark Twain who had that famous humorous adage about, it's not the size of the dog in the fight that counts. It's the size of the fight in the dog. Yeah. Meaning that there are some people who you know, react to aggression in a way that, you know, despite their disadvantages, they'll just go berserk. They'll go crazy. The other side is true. There are persons who can be very, who have cultivated, and that's a key word, May, cultivated learning calm. And instead of allowing themselves to completely run away or freeze or even going into fight, working to just take that breath, step back, and maybe step out of the way, but keep enough presence to say, wow, this is, you know, what you're saying, I get you're really angry about. And certainly if you're trying to, you know, make me scared or intimidate me, I get it. I can feel it. Is that working for you? I can't be here with it. Whatever. If you can interrupt and make that statement just for those, for that moment, because you've cultivated those habits of disengaging reactivity. And again, it's a brain habit, not a mind habit, not just a will habit. It is somewhat a courage habit. That's true. That means you be bold. The positive pole of aggression is boldness. And sometimes Boldness is just standing still, like the demonstrators who were standing perfectly still in the face of aggressive acts. Saying nothing, doing nothing, not moving a muscle. That is a form of boldness and courage that is cultivated, but it is in no way a reactive form. And it does it take practice, May? Yes, it does. And are your overleaves defaulted toward having a kind of systemic reactivity that would bring on fear? Yes, it's true. But the practice, as spiritual teachers always talk about for you, then is that much more necessary for your well-being, because the likelihood of it and the current frequency of it will increase around you. And so building that strength, building that practice, building that discipline is what's in front of you. And not selling yourself out. Okay. Not telling yourself you're too weak or you can't do it or it's too hard.
Yeah, I think if I could have just said, you know, that I can't be with that energy, I think that would have, that would be good. I mean, I'm certainly interested in non-reactive ways. I certainly wish to pursue a non-reactive, you know, avenue. And I've just, what I've done is I've just freeze framed everything. I went into a place of kind of placation, which I felt was the least conflictual, sort of the least exacerbating. And I've basically just put myself on timeout, and I'm just holding, you know, sort of, I'm in a hole. I've just put myself into a holding pattern.
And dear, for right now, as we said to Angela earlier, that is entirely all right. Mm. It is entirely all right. All the sands underneath your feet are shifting, just like they are for everyone. Mm. And so there is no requirement that you be out there, you know, waving, you know, the flag of ecology, or standing there, you know, screaming at QAnons or anything like that, or even standing up to Carl when he's having one of his temper tantrums. You can just say, you know, you can judge me however you like, but I cannot be with this, and I won't subject myself to this. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry you feel this way to me, at me, or about me. But I can't and I won't do this. And then remove yourself. And that is entirely all right. And what will happen is that level of disengagement, conscious verbal disengagement, it also puts your relationships on notice that if they're going to have a relationship with you, they will need to start coming around and doing things differently, even if it's, albeit, you know, in ever so small adjustments. It will happen. But we would never, never ask you to back away, deny, suppress, or not take care of yourself in the presence of that. It's just try and name it as much as you can, and then remove yourself from it as best you can. Ladies and gentlemen, before we go on to you, Phil, if I may, I see that there was a question asked by Alexandra that it really bears answering, because it's a very important one that I saw. And then, Phil, I'll get right to you, I promise. And that is the systemic problem about racism and the kind of you know, social division that we have based on it. And how to, I believe his question was, you know, how do we confront that? How do we deal with that? And what I want to acknowledge, first of all, is that racism and the denial of it is based in, you know, the paradigm of I have a shortage. Frankly, Jillian came up with a quote from Lyndon Baines Johnson that described perfectly, just recently in a conversation a group of us were having, about the nature of what it is that sustains racism or casteism in any culture. And that is that the human animal, the Homo sapien, is hierarchically based. And the infant soul, the baby soul, and the young soul are all in lessons that depend on hierarchical structures, social structures, and dominance-oriented kind of attitudes and behaviors to get their lessons done. So in other words, Alexander, the that you know huge portion of the population that is still with and in those lessons are still dealing with that. Now at the pinnacle of the, you know, where the mature soul gear, so to speak, or the apex of it has ticked over into this beginning of the, and by the way, everyone, Jillian was kind enough to put the quote by Lyndon Baines Johnson, which so adequately expresses this hierarchical need and need to be better than. Because that's the real foundation of both sexism, racism, casteism, economic supremacy, and also the fear of being less than as well. Because the less than is usually then made the scapegoat or the butt of whatever pressure, oppression, suppression, or brutality that that institutions or society or a dominant group has to offer. Is this being challenged? Yes, it is, worldwide. And that is a positive outgrowth. Is it going to go away anytime soon? And the answer is no. It's going to, it is like a pimple or a boil that will have to get worse before it fully pops. But ultimately, the way it will happen is that there are many people in middle economic classes, even upper economic classes, and or of predominant races or castes, you know, white people in America, but working class whites and so forth, who realize they're subjected to the same kind of disparities, lack of advantage and discriminations that any black man has faced, and that they're going to see that the real, quote, enemy, because remember, the young soul mentality is about winner take all, and therefore it's win and lose, and you know the other is enemy then, who wants to take something from you. That's the mentality string that goes along here. Until they start realizing and start reshifting their alliances and realizing that it is wealth, inequality, and systemic unfairness that is built into institutions, it's going to be a scrap. But the way that everyone handles it individually is to start owning the fact where their unearned privileges are. And what we mean by unearned is every one of you here, for instance, is in this group, is Caucasian, or is recognized as a group that isn't picked on. Now, May is Asian, and you have probably in your lifetime, being raised in Britain, suffered some of that, even though you have a British accent and not an Asian language accent. In the United States, all someone has to be is black, or Latino, and they have a complete, you've heard the term, racial profile, and that has been institutionalized and protected and even perpetuated because it is a sleight of hand. Those who have the wealth want to continue to perpetuate race, the distraction of attention onto race, which, by the way, does really exist. It's not that it's unreal, but it's the scapegoat outlet so that the wealthy can keep accruing their power. Once that begins, that facade begins to dissolve, then you will see it begin to be more confronted. So we wanted to just acknowledge that, and it will happen more. And Alex, you as well, forgetting that you also have some Asian background as well. So it is acknowledging that these kind of differences under the baby soul eyes is foreign, alien, and potential scapegoat. Under the mature soul eyes, it's different, that may be spice, that may be interesting, that may be contribution. But those two sets of mindsets are in competition with each other. And it takes a long time to program one's mind into seeing things, seeing difference as delightful, interesting, and ultimately, by the way, superficial. Because the truth is, there is only one race that you all can, and yet it's the human race. No matter what color, no matter, you know, what shape of color of skin, shape of eyes, height of body, language you speak, every human animal can breed with every other human animal and produce offspring. That means you're one species. Racism in itself is a fraud, but it is a fraud that has been perpetuated up to this point in human history because it has facilitated and justified inequality. Power will be expressed differently in the mature paradigm as opposed to the young soul one. And yes, May, that's correct. Power in the mature soul paradigm will be expressed by the individual. And that's, you know, the way that people handled themselves in the 60s and 70s, when they really promoted individualism, that is on every front, whether it was women's liberation or racial equality or all that, that's the way that a mature soul expresses power, through their own personal action, not how they line up in a hierarchy and who they pledge allegiance to or what symbol they pledge allegiance to. Phil, you were next. Thank you, May, for the questions.
Actually, I didn't have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought I saw your hand up. Who did I miss? Russ. I apologize, Russ. Russ, go ahead. And then Jillian. And if I got you out of order, I apologize. I'll answer both of your questions.
That was a good summation, Michael, for the confrontation with somebody aggressive, because it's not going to be the last time, May, you come up with that, or for any of us as we go further into the election and into the next year. You all can see there's a lot of anger out there. Two real quick questions, Michael. A channeling the other night said that we're not acknowledging the movement of the ice that's broken off coming down from Antarctica, and the amount of rise in water,
right,
especially here in North America. And also, the banking, is, as almost all of us understand and realize, is so out of whack. It's pathetic. But we're not talking about how much and how quick a collapse of our economic system is going to be. And the more we bail out, the quicker that's going to happen. Can you comment on that too?
Well, oh boy, short answers. Okay, well, we'll try just a couple of, yes, it's like, yes, leave it to a king to ask a little couple of questions, right? Okay, so Russ, the first, let's do the banking system first. Believe it or not, this actually ties into Brandy's, wherever she, maybe she's gone, Brandy's commentary, oh, there she is, okay, about universal basic income. The irony is the same system that would put that in place has actually already built itself in the financial system. They have unidimensional basic income for billionaires. The stock market is just a big ploy that they trade around these humongous fees and sums to each other and just keep it inflated and then shave a little off on top and call the rest of it an economy. So it's ironic because it's all inflated and it's all fake. It's not even based on real assets anymore. It's all based on inflated financial claims and contractual illusions to things. But guess what? As long as everybody buys into the illusion, that's what Maya is, from, you know, our teachings terminology. It's the working Maya. Where the problem comes in is the continued indebted enslavement or slave indebtedness that is putting everybody else under the gun. And the fact that not only that all of you, you know, have credit card debt to one degree or another, or mortgages, or owe on your cars, which are astronomically overpriced, and all these different things where, you know, then you have this perpetuating cycle of you got to go out and get money somewhere, somehow, because they also need to produce these things somehow. And that takes, quote, money. So they self-inflate this and self-perpetuate this to a degree that, again, will eventually collapse. But it's not so quick that, you know, what happens is, and what you saw in the Great Recession, is when the rich get sloppy and they got ultra greedy and they forgot to shore up the bottom enough that the system actually collapsed. And then they, then the, all the politicians they owned bailed them out, right? And but then Mr. Obama, another mature soul, came in and, you know, said, well, let's do what you do in like FDR, let's pour $2 trillion into rebuilding infrastructure and then start it, kick, you know, pump priming the thing again. However, a lot of people lost homes and have never recovered from them. And now you have more homeless out there. So that is a thing that the economic union, the European Union, said, no, we put bankers in jail, you know, when they pull those kind of shenanigans. And we have regulations in place that don't allow those people to lose their homes as quickly as the snap of the fingers. So it's the American economy. And is it the, and is the American economy, you know, a bellwether or a harbinger for a global economic downturn? Well, yeah, to a degree, but believe it or not, not as bad as it once was. Even with all the chest pounding about America being great and financial and everything, yes, it would cause an economic contraction, but a lot of countries learned about what American financial industry shenanigans do. And took some steps against it so that their repercussions are not going to be as bad. Okay, so that's that, the banking system. The global ice sheet. Now, quote, the part of climate change that has to do with global warming and particularly oceans warming and therefore ice melting and large-scale ice pouring into the sea has some very interesting possible effects, some of them actually good. All that fresh water pouring into the ocean is going to mean that a lot of krill and shrimp and little baby animals that feed the entirety of the ocean food chain are going to be born and be able to keep up the food supply. The problem is there's also a ton of plastic in there. So a lot of plastic is going to be ingested by the remaining fish. But what most people are concerned about, of course, is their real estate holdings on the coast. That's the thing that, you know, people get really freaked out about. It's like, oh my God, what about my Florida property? Well, you know, your Florida property in 30 years is pretty much going to be a houseboat. And so you might as well start building pontoons. None of this is going to be like tomorrow, the ocean is not going to rise 20 feet. However, every year it is rising several inches. And by the end of next decade, it'll start rising by a foot or two a year. And by the end of this century, it'll be 20 feet higher. But guess what? At that particular point, a person could glue together matchsticks into a pontoon and save their property faster than that. But of course, that is mitigation, not actually dealing with the problem. There are actually technologies that will be available to actually recool the planet, but they are going to take massive investment and massive dislocation of current industries to do it. I mean, if there's any place, and we don't recommend this, but if there's any place any of you as old souls ever wanted to get homicidal, you might as well at least do it in a way that dislocates some of the institutions at the top. And we're not suggesting you do it, but if you wanted to be effective, that's one outlet where it would help humanity. So, good night, Rita. Thank you for coming. So, let's see. So, Russ, we answered yours. Jillian, and then Jan, and then we're done for the night, folks. So, Jillian, go ahead. You're not muted, but we can't hear you. Can you try and fix your problem, and I'll go to Jan, and then I'll come back to you. Okay, thank you. Jan Russell, you had the question, if you have, want to have the floor. If she can figure out how to unmute herself. Well, there you go.
Oh, I didn't actually have a question, but I could, there's various things I might toss out, sort of going back to consuming.
Yes.
I'm an object maker.
Yes,
and,
yes.
You know, as some of you know. And so, you know, an issue, I suppose, for me, or a quandary, is how much do I want, how much should I produce, how much do I want to produce? You know, part of weaving for me is it does keep me balanced.
Yeah.
You know, so I am planning to keep weaving. But, you know, an interesting thing about the isolation and so forth is, you know, my outlets are closed or sales are at zero. And I guess I should also say, when I say sales, that I've made money doing this, but never enough money to actually support myself. So it's been a labor of love. You know, it's a thing I love to do and don't really do it for the money. So anyway, I don't know if there's a question in there, but or just a contribution, but that's been a dilemma in a sense, you know, for me. And well, I think I'm sorting it out, but.
Well, a couple things we would like to comment. First of all, you said labor of love. That is a powerful construct. Because your labor of love not only gives you a sense of dignity, worth, but you produce beauty in the world. Beauty is the highest form and expression of love that you can display in the world. And a lot of people think your stuff is beautiful, and that's why they do buy it when they can buy it. On an economic level, the fact that cottage industries will be coming back, because they will have to, they will have to because a lot of people can't afford the means. And in resource-based economies, you will have, thank you, Mary, by the way, for coming, Larson, that you will have more instances and more circumstances where you will be given opportunities or presented with opportunities, maybe not given, but presented with opportunities where trading what you produce for things that you need will be more likely to happen, because in this gift and exchange kind of economy, that is where things will be going. The third thing is what you can't, you do have some control over, is that you use mostly natural fibers, do you not, in your weaving?
It's a mix. I suppose I use quite a bit of rayon chenille, which is, it's man-made, mm-hmm. but it's cellulose.
Yes, so. But cellulose is a lot different from petroleum.
True.
And products, even man-made products that do have a shortened degenerative life cycle, like something that like cellulose-based stuff, is better for the world in general than using, say, materials that are essentially plastic, in their basic fibers or what have you. You making your moves to those kind of things are all contributions. And to the degree to which it keeps your sanity, as well as you produce beauty, you are still making a contribution. Then the next thing is how can you evolve your skill set to actually collect things from people and actually either show them how, show yourself, but show the world either how to reweave them, reuse them, reconstitute them. There are, fiber collection industries out there that are, getting to do that, to take clothing apart and reconstitute it into new things. That is a form of recycling that also will make its headway. But political power is where it will come from. And as more of the millennials take power, you know, they will be saying, first of all, the millennials are pissed as hell at all you baby boomers. You know that. Even you nice baby boomers, you know, who are, you know, love and light and all that kind of stuff. They think you are assholes because you're the ones who really exploded this economic system into the greed-based hegemony that it is now. Thank you, Barbara, for sharing a link to Jan's stuff. So anyway, when you guys get out of economic power and economic control, which is only an election or two away, then, you know, a lot of the things that were put in place are going to be reversed. So from that standpoint, just do your best. That's all you can do. And do your beauty.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Let's see. Back to Jillian, and then we're going to call it a night.
I love that.
I'm sorry, what was that? Who, what said? Oh, that sounds like a David laugh.
Okay. I just said, do your beauty.
Yes.
Do your beauty. Do your beauty. That could be a quote for tonight.
Thank you, David, for capturing that meme. That's appreciated. Love it. All right. So we're going to close out tonight with Jillian's question and comment. So go ahead, Jillian. You are still silent, dear. Let's see. I don't think I've muted you. Asked to unmute. I'm asking you to unmute. Okay, you still show as muted. Okay, I see your lips moving. Jillian, I'm sorry to say, but I'm not hearing anything. Is there anybody else? No. We're seeing Russ mime that he's not hearing anything. And some of you are very interesting sign language people. So, Joe. What? I'm sure it's an excellent question, dear. Did you want to try and type it in? Okay, there's Jan, my Etsy store. We thank you all from the East Coast who are, you know, facing like a, you know, I guess it's getting close to 11 o'clock out there. And for those of you who stuck through the dinner hour with us, we much appreciate it. And just remember, we'll be sending you the copy of this a copy of this recording, and now both halves of the file chat text, because obviously we got interrupted in the middle, and so it's going to be stitched together. I think she's. Are you still typing, Jillian? Why? Okay. Yes. 1 second. You're saying okay.
And you thought my question was going to be too big.
We compliment you for helping us to be succinct.
It'll be
okay, this is a very difficult time. I cannot sit without doing something. Today, learning that ICE is sterilizing prisoners, such reckless abandon regarding COVID. Yeah. I'm sitting here labeling postcards. The cruelty is the point. Does it really make any difference? It does. Yes, it does in the long term, Jillian. It does in the long term. But you're right. Is cruelty ramped up because of the fear, terror, and hatred that is being mobilized in the Western world? Yes, it is, and that's, you know, this is one of the ways. And of course, sterilization is what the Nazis did to the Jews, those who were mentally handicapped. And so it's an act of, their crimes against humanity. Yes, if Trump, I will have liturgy to want to stick around. We understand that, and there will be there will be a number of persons who choose to migrate off the planet. For those of you, we think if you could read the chat section, Jillian's question was about, does, you know, her work make any difference, because she's very politically involved. And then she followed up with a statement, if Trump and the GOP win, I have little reason to want to stick around. So let us just direct that as a closing statement. First of all, Joe Biden faces his best chances to date to beat Donald Trump. And they are still less than 50-50. We will tell you that it does look like the Senate will turn in this election. So in that regard, that is the those are the reports on that. And if the Senate does turn, Trump will be impeached again. And this time he will be impeached. That is to say, kicked out of office. But, you know, it will be a wild ride. And other actors in the world will also have their influences, including Mr. Putin. He is really the most dangerous wild card on your planet today, not Donald Trump. So in any case, let's see, Brandon, where I feel a lot like you do some, to Jillian, yes. Every old soul who's ever been here can feel the limitation on their energies. And since many an old soul are those who are over 50 years of age, you know, feel the sense of how much, you know, this last 100 years in human history has been a dead run for human progress. And many of you have gone through lessons, sheer numbers of lessons, let alone the sheer pressure and complexity of lessons that you might have done in 15 or 20 lives in your early baby baby soul eras. So it's tiring, to say the least. So with that, ladies and gentlemen, all go and get some rest, and know that the more rested you are and the less sleep deprived you are, and the more that you keep a clear head and a meditated mind, and even acknowledge your addictions sometimes, but don't indulge your addictions all the time. You will get through this. You will continue to make a contribution. And most of all, if you're feeling really lonesome, reach out to each other. That'll make it a lot more bearable. And with that, we will say goodnight. Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Love to you all.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Steve. That was excellent. Thank you, Michael.
Steven, thank you, Michael.
You,
Steve. Yeah, thanks, Steve. Thanks to Michael. Blessings, everyone.
Yeah. Thanks to all of you for your good questions.
Yeah, everyone.
We're stronger.
Invite anyone to come and join us on the Wednesday.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. So, and for those of you who are still here, Catherine, by any chance, or is any one of my regulars who come to the COVID call, got that? Let me see if I can get that that link handy, and I'll post it right here.
Okay.
Let's see.
Yeah.
And can you send out the chat summary to everyone, Steve?
I will, yes, I will. I'll send it along with a link to the you know what, I can't get to it while I got this Zoom meeting open.
And okay, it's not really I might handy. Be able to, just a second.
So I'll put it, I will put it in the email with the chat summary, so all of you can get it, and I will be sending out the link to the email. Excuse me, the link to the recording and to the chat summary and everything else on Wednesday, because tomorrow I have to prepare for a class that some of you are in, and tonight I'm going to go and collapse a little bit. So, ladies and gentlemen, I thank you all for coming, and I thank you all for your support.
You've had a big day.
Bye, everybody.
Love to you all.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Blessings.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.